A very warm welcome to the Brahma Kumaris and Harmony House. And we really have an amazing guest, a regular fixture now, I think, Sister Jensi. And it's a very short notice. She literally arrived back into the UK, I think it was Tuesday, was it Tuesday?
Monday.
And she says, okay, I'm free. And Lester, Harmony House, we got her. Today's a very special topic, the author of my own happiness. Are you all your own authors, or do you have ghostwriters? You know, we do hit those moments when we have those writer's blocks, we just don't know what to do, we get disheartened, and happiness is gone, and we don't know how we can restore that happiness. Well, today we have really a wonderful exponent of how to maintain happiness. So Sister Jensi is a European director of the Brahma Kumaris, and she's been with the Brahma Kumaris practicing meditation for over 50 years now. So she is a wonderful ambassador of what happiness is. So I'm really pleased, on behalf of all of you, I'd just like to welcome Sister Jensi to Harmony House. So one wave of appreciation.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to begin with a greeting of peace. Om Shanti. Om means I am, and Shanti means peace. So it's a greeting of peace to my sisters and my brothers. Before I get into the subject on what we need to do personally, I just like to set the frame. Some years ago, there was a person who was a professor here in the UK, and he was asked by the American government to come across and do some research on the subject of happiness. And they brought him across, and he had a large team of researchers. And so rather than just think about the theory of happiness, he had his researchers go out across and ask people what they thought about happiness and what is it that could bring happiness. And you won't be surprised if I tell you that they said that happiness comes from wealth. Do you agree? No. But anyway, at that time, the number of people who stated that happiness comes from wealth was the highest out of all the different things that they said. And the second response was, again, in a world that is the way it is, not surprising, they said beauty. So they commented on the fact that these two were the things that bring happiness. So he decided to test this out and see how it works. And so what he then did was to go to the place where there's the largest number of millionaires per square mile, and that is Washington, D.C. And so having gone there, some of the wealthiest people in the world were being questioned about this, and their responses were very interesting. What they said was that no, wealth did not bring them happiness. Why? It caused them a great deal of worry and anxiety because of the thought that they might lose it. How can they keep it? How can they protect it? How can they make sure that it stays with them? So all of these factors were causing them sleepless nights and certainly wasn't bringing any happiness. But then they also had that edge of competition in them, in which they became very worried and concerned that others would overtake them in the stakes and they would be left behind. And so they wanted to be within the highest. They didn't want to be left behind. And so that was a matter of great concern. They were also very worried about their safety and the safety of their families, because the world being what it is, anybody could come and abduct them or their family and then demand huge sums of ransom, things like this. And so safety became a huge matter of concern. But also, they found that they couldn't trust their friends. they didn't know if the people who they were talking to were actually wanting to be friends or whether they wanted their money. And so it gave them a sense of mistrust in which they didn't feel comfortable in a genuine way with people around them. And so looking at that whole list, can you imagine? Were they feeling happy? No, they weren't feeling very happy at all. Rather, they were feeling quite anxious and fearful. So then, the next thing, he decided that it was time to go to Hollywood to check out beautiful people. And when he got there, again, a whole number of very beautiful people, men and women, who were being interviewed about whether beauty brought them happiness. And guess what happened? The people he was meeting and interviewing, they all had very specific responses. They said that, no, beauty wasn't making them very happy, because they were always concerned that there were newer, younger ones coming on the scene and they would take their place. Secondly, again, they were very concerned that anybody who was friends with them, was it because they thought that they could be connected with a celebrity, they could be connected with somebody famous, and so they would want to be friends with them for that reason? And so again, there was a lack of trust in the people who were approaching them and people who wanted to have a connection and relationship with them. Thirdly, no surprise, they couldn't eat comfortably, because every spoonful of food maybe meant more calories. And so they had to be so careful of what it is they were eating. They had to make sure they were looking in the mirror, not just every day, but several times a day, to make sure there were no new lines and wrinkles coming up. And so it was rather stressful trying to maintain their beauty. And they weren't sure that all the effort they were putting in was worthwhile. And so beauty certainly didn't make them very happy. It made them famous, but it didn't bring happiness. And so the professor decided that he had to work on a deeper level. And what he then understood after speaking to many others was people really were able to find happiness when there was a life of good character, when there was a life in which there was a solid foundation of good values, and it was education that gave them the courage, the strength to be able to move in the direction of their values. And so these were actually the ingredients and the foundation of happiness. Now, all this is from that research. What does spirituality have to say about all of this? Well, one more thing just before that. One of the most popular courses at Harvard University is, guess what? Happiness. The subject of happiness is being studied and is being practiced, and people are understanding that this is a very important ingredient in our life. It's important to get a degree in happiness. And where does spirituality fit in within all of this? Well, spirituality says that truly you are the author of your own life. You can write the script of your own life. You can write a book about yourself in the way that you choose. In fact, ultimately, this is the only thing that can work. Because other people can tell you all sorts of things, but at no point can you actually hand over responsibility to them, because finally, at the end of the day, whatever it is that has happened, it's me who has actually spoken what I've spoken, done what I've done, had the attitude that I've had, and all of these things are totally dependent on me. The influence of others can work to a certain extent, but to what extent? Well, it's to whatever extent I actually allow it to happen. But even if there is an external influence, I am the one who actually then says, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to say. Nobody can make me say things I don't want to say. Nobody can make me do things I don't want to do. Finally, this is actually each one's responsibility. And so, as I write the story of my life, and I'm writing it right now, it's not that somebody up there has sent a script for me to repeat, but no, every moment I can either write the story with awareness and consciousness and do whatever it is I need to do, or I can be half awake or half asleep and I can sort of scroll something and not be totally aware of what it is I'm writing. And maybe then after a little bit of time, when I see that things aren't working out as I would like them to, and I have a look, then I say, my goodness, what was going on? Why was I asleep? But now at this moment, I feel we are at a very special time in human history. Do you feel that? It's not like it's been for the last 500 years or 1,000 years even. I feel that this is a time for absolutely momentous change. The ingredients of all the things that are going on in the world are quite incredible. On the one side, a huge amount of negativity. But on the other side, absolutely a beautiful little sapling is growing. And it's growing because people want to have a different type of world. People want to have a life in which there's happiness, not just for me, but happiness for the whole community. People want to have a life in which we're together as one human family. We've never had this sense of togetherness in the past, whether it's technology, whether it's exploration, whatever it is, but truly the world has come together in a very, very significant way. And yet at the same time, the divisions that exist and the fractures that exist in the world are also huge. And people on all sorts of levels are now acknowledging this. It is a time in which we can see the world is truly fractured. So how do we put it together again? And so it's an amazing time in which things are absolutely in a state of chaos, and yet we have the opportunity and a new awareness, a new consciousness, a new togetherness in which we can do something very positive and beautiful for the future. And so this is that time in which we can now bring about transformation. It's a time in which we can write our own script for the future. So how are we going to do it? I'm not a writer, but I know that the seed of every book that's written begins in silence. Most things begin in silence. Anything that's creative, whether it's a work of art, whether it's a piece of music, whether it's a talk, the seed is silence. And so, am I able to go into silence? And if each day is a new page in my book, at the start of the day, am I able to spend a little bit of time in silence, preparing myself for what the day is going to bring? sometimes we know that today is going to be a challenging day. Sometimes we don't know. And more often, I think maybe we don't know. Life brings many surprises and we don't know how things are going to unfold. But if I start my day, so whatever time the family wakes up, wake up a bit earlier than that. Whatever time your normal routine begins, this is different, this is extra. Wake up earlier and prepare yourself. And so in that preparation time, what I need to do is to be able to just fill myself with power from above, that light, that love, that peace, that joy. And if I can recharge my battery in this way, then through the day, what I'll be doing is sharing the gifts that I personally have received. And so every time I share peace with another, do you know what happens? It comes back to me multiplied. Every time I put out good vibrations of good wishes for others and happiness for all, their blessings come back to me multiplied. So if I begin the day filling myself with happiness and I share happiness with others, then my own level of happiness is going to rise. And so happiness doesn't come from accumulating wealth. It doesn't come from accumulating possessions. It doesn't come from physical beauty or physical qualifications. It is something of the spirit within. And so when I begin to understand this and I fill myself with that love and joy first thing in the morning, I have a treasure store, a whole stock that I'm able to give and share with others. And so the first way to be able to experience happiness and be the author of each page of my life, of my book, fill myself from the source. The source is unlimited, and to let me be able to fill myself. And then secondly, to share that which I have received with others. And my own treasure store will continue to overflow, and it will reach everybody around me. The third thing, when I say share happiness, it can be in many different ways, but little acts of kindness. If there's something even little that I can do for another, maybe a few moments with somebody. Some of you know Dadi Janki, and she's now 102, moving on to 103. And she was resident in London for 40 years and came to Leicester many, many, many times, as recently as last year actually. And what Dadi used to do is she would take a round of the house, and you see this beautiful home of spirituality here. Now multiply this maybe four times and you get an idea of the house in London. And literally she would take this little silver box of almonds. They'd been soaked overnight and peeled, and so this little box of peeled almonds, and she would go around the house, up and down and everywhere, and whoever she met, she would give them some almonds. And it was really just an excuse just to make contact with them. And so it wasn't a big deal, you know, you can give many things, but all she did was give a few almonds. But the point was, she would be making personal contact with each one. And that moment of connection, and if there was something they wanted to say to her, she was available. If there was something she needed to say to them, they were there present in front of her. And so that connection on a human level is what was happening. And so today, if I just walk past somebody ignoring them, what does it feel like? And yes, I might have many things to do, but if instead of ignoring somebody, I can spend a moment with somebody and just have that connection and exchange, would that make a difference? Well, you can imagine. Yes, it does. And so, little acts of kindness, even just that moment of acknowledgement. So whether it's your home, whether it's your place of work or your place of study or whatever it may be, but just simply make contact. And in that human contact, there's a little act of kindness there, making time for another human being. And so that will definitely bring a lot of happiness. Think about how when challenges come, it's not so much the question of what actually happens, more it's the question of how you face the challenge and whether you're able to maintain your calm and your inner joy in the face of those challenges. When I'm in an audience, and it doesn't happen so much now, but early days when we were teaching meditation, not just in London, but generally in the West, there could be quite a lot of aggression in the audience, and people would come to challenge us. I'm thinking about one particular situation in which I was in an Eastern European country, and this was in the early 90s, I think, because it was after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and so things had shifted and changed. But in this particular country, Catholicism had come in very strongly again, which is fine, but you know how sometimes people can be quite fundamental. And so it was a gathering of about 400 people. And in that gathering, there was one person at the back who was challenging. And he started asking one question and gave a response, and he wanted to ask another question. So he started walking from the back towards the stage, holding the mic and asking not just a question, but making big statement. And it was basically about, well, why is it that we were converting people? And I said, it's not a conversion, but it's actually just an understanding of the self and what it is we need to do in life and so on. But of course, he had a specific point of view he wanted to express, so he was quite aggressive about it. And the practice of meditation gave me the capacity to maintain my cool. I wasn't afraid, I wasn't flustered. I knew that the only way to deal with the situation was to connect with the inner being and just hold my peace and give as reasonable a response as I could. And you know what happened? People within the audience turned around and said to him, "We've heard enough from you, now we want to hear the sister." And so it wasn't the words, it was the inner feeling, and it was the vibrations. And so keep your cool, and whatever are the outer circumstances, it's your inner peace and your inner joy that's going to carry you through it all. And so sometimes there'll be praise, sometimes there'll be criticism. But whichever it is that comes your way, hold on to your inner peace. If there's praise today, who knows, within half an hour, within an hour, within a day, it can so quickly turn around and become something else. So neither am I dependent on the praise, nor must I be affected by the criticism. But yes, the lesson I need to learn from all of this is I need to keep connecting with the inner being and keep holding on to that awareness of who I am. And in that way, I am in charge of writing my script. If I let an external circumstance change me, I've lost the plot. They're now in charge. And so to hold on to my peace is my responsibility. And in that peace, I can stay content. I can become connected with the happiness that I carry within myself. And so happiness stays if I stay connected with the inner being. Another little tip. You know how you can use £10, spend £10 and be very content. Why? Because you've spent that money in a worthwhile way. But if you've even lost 50p, you'll keep looking for it. I had it. Where was it? Where did I lose it? And so spending £10 is not a big deal. I've done it because there was something useful. But losing 50p and I get fooled by it. Where is it? I want to find it. And so it's human nature that whatever it is we use in a worthwhile way is always going to be something that makes me feel content and happy. And if I'm wasting something, then that loss is something that I feel keenly and it takes away some of my happiness. And so let me think about what are the assets that I have and am I using the assets that I have in a worthwhile way? And maybe the most precious is my time. Am I right? And if I've spent my time in a worthwhile way, it immediately brings me a great sense of happiness and joy. And yet, if I haven't spent my time in a worthwhile way, and my time has really just been frittered away in this thing, that thing, and the other thing, or just being a couch potato watching the little box in front of me, or nowadays your very big boxes that you have in front of you. But whichever it is, but do I feel happy? Half an hour? 1 hour? Average viewing time in Britain at the moment is between 4 to 5 hours per day. We would all say we're very busy. And so where do we get 4 hours from to be able to watch television? So there's something that doesn't quite fit here. But it's become like the wallpaper, the background in which other things are happening, but that's always on. But it's having an impact. It's wasting my energy. It's draining my thoughts. And so my time is not just the clock time, but my time is connected with how I'm using my thoughts. My time is also connected with how am I using my energy. And so if my thoughts, my time, my energy is being used in a worthwhile way, the feeling of that will be great joy. I'll feel that everything is going in the right direction in a worthwhile way. And if perchance it's not that, it's going in a different direction, and one is just a wastage of time and energy, but the other is where maybe it's not just being wasteful, it's actually being toxic. If, for example, I've spent 10 minutes in criticism, in gossip. Now, what's the feeling I'm left with after that? Is it a feeling of satisfaction? Is it a feeling that, yeah, that was something valuable, something useful? Or is it a feeling that, well, you know, I'm not feeling so good inside. And maybe I'm not yet connecting that the time spent in gossip or criticism is what has caused this. But as I begin to understand the inner workings of the soul, I begin to realize that it is connected. The way I think, the way I speak, the content of what I'm thinking and speaking, they are very, very much connected with my own inner state of feelings. And so if I want to have happiness inside, then let me have thoughts that are good ones. Let me use my time in sharing good thoughts with others. Spend 5 minutes in a heart-to-heart spiritual exchange with another, and it'll uplift you. At the present time, Daddy's physical health is, well, you can imagine, 102. She doesn't have a huge amount of physical energy anymore. And so when she would meet a group of us, this is last week in India, so when she'd meet with a group of us, whether a small group or a large gathering, she would share just a little bit, just a few minutes. But within those few minutes, there would be something which was so significant and so powerful, it would be an inspiration to all of us. And so, if I'm spending my time, my thoughts and my words for something that's beautiful and true and real, something from the spiritual dimension that can be of value to another, of inspiration to another, it's going to leave me with a heightened sense of joy. Listening to things of spirituality and being aware of that whole dimension, that immediately brings a great deal of joy. But speaking about those things and thinking about them, it brings an even greater joy that actually stays with the soul, and nobody can take away that treasure. And so just being aware that my time is my own, my thoughts are my own, my energy is my own, how am I going to use all of this? If I'm doing things that are going to bring somebody else happiness, if I'm saying things that are going to bring another one closer to understanding and realization, that's going to bring joy. If I share a few ideas that will enable somebody to deepen their own relationship with the divine, well, these are all different ways in which I can actually come closer to God myself, but also bring others closer to God, and the happiness of that multiplies and overflows. And so in a very practical way, from the morning through to the night, each day of my life, I'm writing a new page. But here's a question. If at the end of today, I'm left with the sense that, well, today what I wrote wasn't so uplifting, wasn't so beautiful, what do I do about that? Sit and cry about it? Have guilt and burden and heaviness about it? Well, that's not going to help. But what I can do is, at the end of the day, just as at the beginning of the day, there's the preparation. At the end of the day, it's also important to have closure. Do an audit for the self. Was there something good that I was able to do? Acknowledge that and give thanks to the Divine for having given you the inspiration and the courage and the commitment to do it. And so spend that time just reflecting. The good, yes, thanks to the Lord, but also reinforcing that it's something I can continue with on a daily basis. Something bad. Well, what did I learn from that? Is there something I can learn? Could I have done it differently? And where was it that the slip-up happened and I could have moved things in a different way and somehow I didn't? And so at what point could I have made a difference? So that I know for the future, for myself, what it is I need to do to make sure that things go in the right way. Because usually what happens in human life is that we make a mistake and then we say, oh well, there's nothing I can do about it anyway. And so the next time a similar thing happens, I'll probably make a similar mistake. And that's it. There's a pattern that's been set that will take over and push me in the direction of that mistake again and again. But if I've been able to catch it, to be able to check it, and to understand where was it that things slipped away, and at what moment of time is it I could have prevented things slipping away, it makes a huge difference to the quality of my life and the impact that I have on others around me. And so, at the end of the day, to take stock and to check. And the first big step, of course, is checking, because most times we are so exhausted, you say, oh, I'm not going to think about anything now, I'm just going to go to sleep. And even if I can't go to sleep because there is something that's creating this tension and pressure, things weren't right, but I'm not ready to acknowledge that and I'll just toss and turn. But to actually take a few minutes, it doesn't take half an hour, it doesn't take 10 minutes, it will take just a few minutes. And once you get into the habit of doing this, really, that's all it takes. You can just glance back at the day and be aware of what happened and what's going on and what you need to do. And so taking that time to check the positive, the things that were not so good, and the things that were learned. And if I can do this, then the change that I would like to see happen in myself will begin to happen. And in this way, then, I'll be able to maintain my happiness and keep it growing. If you remember the research I was talking about earlier, one factor was character, good character. The other factor was education. And the third one was a life of values. And these were the ingredients for happiness. If at the end of the day, my conscience is clear and I know I've been following my own voice of conscience, the soul is very content, very happy. If the core values that I hold inside myself are what I'm doing in life, if both of these things match together, I'm going to be very happy. If what's going on in my life doesn't match my own inner core values, if there's a big divergence, then I can pretend to be happy, but I can't really feel that happiness because there's a mismatch, and so there's a conflict that's going on inside. And so often physical illness is the outcome of what's going on inside. I would actually say all illness is connected with what's going on in my mind. But maybe that sounds a bit drastic to some of you. But I think that more and more we have evidence of this. So the conflict that's coming inside my own mind and my heart is when I see, because I know, others might not know, I can see where it is I'm not following my own inner principles, my own core values. And that discrepancy robs me of my happiness. Am I right? And so, if I want happiness, then the converse is also true. I start living by my core values and I feel happy and light and content. The more I study spiritual knowledge, this education is something that's lifelong learning, truly it is. Daddy still continues to study, age 102. And so let me continue to study and expand my consciousness. Again, we're at a very special moment in history now when there's so much information available. In fact, it's overload. But I can have the perception to know what is it that's useful for me. And certainly to study spiritual knowledge is hugely valuable. To know about myself, to know about the divine, to know about the law of cause and effect. This is part of spiritual study. And it's very, very useful in terms of what's going on for me personally, but also what my contribution can be for the world at the moment. And so, education, values, and a good life. If I can make sure that I'm following a standard of life that my conscience is in agreement with, I'll be happy, I'll be content, and my life will be an example to others. So, keeping some of these things in mind from morning through to the evening, and you'll find that each day the page that you're writing is filled with a lot of joy and happiness for not just now, but it's an accumulation. Each day I accumulate more and it becomes a power that protects me from any negative influence. When there's discontent and lack of happiness within, then many things begin to go wrong. Anger comes, attachment comes, possessiveness comes, greed comes, the feeling of lack. So I don't want those things. I want happiness, and that's in my own hands. So write your own story every single day. Om Shanti.
Shanti. Well, I'd like to thank Sister Jency for sharing a lot of depth and breadth in that happiness, and also giving a very comprehensive list of how to attain happiness and keep that happiness. But some of you may have some questions that are very personal or very general, and this is your opportunity to question Sister Jency about the topic. So we have two roaming mics. If you just raise your hands, we'll get a mic to you and you can raise your question. Anybody have questions? There's a question at the back. Somebody at the back.
About a year ago, I was speaking to a friend of mine. He wasn't very happy, and he was up in studying spirituality as well. I just said that to remain happy is part of your life. Don't let it go. Then he asked me a question. He says, how do you define happiness? I did not have an answer to that one. And also thinking about it now as well, how would you define happiness, and is it a feeling or is it would you say happiness is a feeling?
I would say happiness is the original state of being of the soul. So it's an inner state in which the soul feels content, it's a state of well-being, and then yes, within human life it leads to that expression of a feeling, but it's not just a feeling, because feelings can come and go and shift with the wind, but it's actually the inner original core value of the soul.
To somebody.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Are there any more questions?
How would you actually define happiness in very short?
I would say that it's the original natural state of being of the soul. That would be my definition of happiness.
Okay, while you're thinking of some questions, I have a question for you, Sister Jenty. Now, some of the audience may think, well, it's all right for Sister Jenty to be happy. She's surrounded by people who are working on their character and they're always happy. But you don't know the people in my life. They're miserable, they're always pushing my buttons. How do I maintain happiness?
I'm very fortunate, it's true. But I'm very much part of the world that all of you are in. For example, when I travel, then sometimes there are huge traffic jams. As we were coming today, I don't know what had gone wrong. Then later on we found that the toll road on the M6 has been closed. And so maybe that's what was causing the loop of huge traffic to come on the M1. But a journey that you would at one point have thought would take you 90 minutes or 2 hours was taking over 2.5 hours today. But, you know, you can either let yourself worry and get grumpy, or you can stay cool and stay, it's okay, it's fine. Another situation, when you're in a spiritual path, there's a lot of cleaning that happens. And the things that you've kept undercover start coming out. And so the people I'm surrounded by are, yes, definitely they're meditators, but they're going through that process of cleansing. And so sometimes it's ego that jumps out, sometimes it's old karmic, do you understand the word karmic accounts? Yeah? Sort of give and take, an exchange that isn't completed. And so there are karmic accounts that we're dealing with, and so I'm surprised at their reactivity. I'm surprised at how they want to say things that I would have not expected them to say. So maybe I've pushed their buttons, maybe they're pushing mine. So people are people. And so I'm surrounded by that wherever it is I go. So you have to learn to keep cool given all of those circumstances. And so I think if you make a decision that each day I'm going to make sure that I stay connected with myself and that inner core value that is so precious, I'm not going to let it go. It's a decision. It's not something that happens automatically or just by luck and circumstance.
Don't be shy. We have a question there, over there.
Om Shanti. I just want to say, I think most of us here are living in like family life, so where we have a husband and children. So like you say, life is challenging. I don't think that life every day is the same. And sometimes, like you say, it could be the husband could push the buttons or the children. And in 24 hours, when you have a family life, to fit the cooking, the cleaning, the washing, the children's homework, taking them to karate, playing the football, it's, you think 24 hours is not enough. So I think sometimes, you know, you do try to, like you say, find that 5 minutes to find that inner happiness. Sometimes you do struggle, I think, especially for women, I think most of Asian women may agree here. So if you put yourself in that situation, Sister Jayanti, how would you, how would you spend the time, 24 hour clock to, you know, like saying, sit and have that 5 minutes of meditation? Sometimes it does become very, you're so determined, you wish, oh, Baba, I do want to sit, but you sometimes don't get that time. But I find it difficult. I just wanted to know, so that happiness.
I think it's a question of prioritizing. What is it that's important for me? And if I think something is important, I'm going to make time for it. You know, if you know that you need to go to see the doctor, you're going to find a way to make it happen. It's not an option. You have to do it. Same thing. For me, meditation isn't an option. It's a necessity. I know that I need to have that time, even just that short space, even 5-10 minutes is a good starter. And so just give yourself that space. Whatever it is that maybe I can sacrifice, maybe 10 minutes less reading something, 10 minutes less doing something, maybe 10 minutes less sleep. That's difficult. Sleep is very sweet and precious, especially in the morning. Somehow it's very precious at that time especially. But if I can make that short time available, then that's really a very, very good starter. And you'll start feeling how it's so helpful for you, you don't want to miss it.
Totally agree. You need that 5-10 minutes for the whole day's chaos.
You need to get the compass straight. Once you set the compass straight, then that helps you through the whole day. And you see how effective it is. And the day that you don't make that time, you see how things go awry. And so makes you realize that that really is so important.
True. Okay. Thank you.
Now some people, Sister Jayanti, they're very happy, but suddenly there could be a trigger in their life from caused by an individual or a situation, and which causes a relapse in their happiness, and it takes them back to that situation, that time in their life that caused them a lot of pain and sorrow, but they can't let it go. How can they have closure and so they can come back into happiness again?
Whatever it is that's happened, if I hang on to it, I'm not able to move forward within myself. Time is moving forward and time is going by, but I'm still stuck in the past, and it becomes a burden that I carry, in which I'm not taking benefit of what the present moment offers. And so I can see why mindfulness has become such a powerful tool for people in today's world, because to be able to focus on what the present is offering and keep my mind here is such an important thing. And if I'm stuck to the things of the past, I still carry the pain and sorrow, and it's never going to leave me, and it's actually going to make me physically unwell also. And so if I value myself, if I value my friends and family, and I want to be of support for them, available for them, it's my responsibility to look after my mind and my body. And when I understand this, I'll say, okay, what has happened, now let me move on. I won't hang on to the things of the past.
There's a question, third row.
maybe resentment or anger. You know, for me, I can sort of, when I talk for myself, I can be in a state of happiness. And things do arise, you know, sort of like a resentment or something that's angered me in the past. And it seems very easy to say, and for other people to sort of let go of that whatever it is that's disturbing them. And for me, there seems to be a longer process with things, and I can't let it go until it's totally exhausted me. Just in some simple things as well, you know, it's like I tend to hold on to things longer than necessary. How would you explain or teach or have any experience in explaining how do you let go of something before you going through the process? Am I making sense? How can you let go of it quicker and stop yourself from having more pain, which is going to have an effect then of being in a state of happiness?
Okay. Let me add a different dimension to what you're saying and make it very practical. Say, for example, it's been something in which someone has said or done something that's causing me pain, and I'm holding on to that. What I need to do is to be able to forgive. And sometimes we think that forgiveness is an act of compassion for another. But no, it's actually freedom for myself. Being able to forgive and let go is actually finding freedom for myself. And so when I put it in that way, what is it that's going to be of benefit for me? I'm putting it in a very totally selfish way, but just knowing that if I can let go and forgive, I'm going to be the one who benefits. And for me, when it's a question of something that's happened with another human being, I also have to remember that they're not accountable to me. There's another power that they're accountable to. And so I don't have to hold that responsibility. It happened, okay. Let them have their account settled, the Creator. I don't have to think about it anymore. It's not my responsibility. My responsibility is to take care of myself. If I don't take care of myself, I'm not going to be of any use to me or to anybody else around me. And so just knowing that I have a responsibility to take care of myself, and so what am I doing about that, means that I start looking at things differently.
Sandy, Didi, you've just said that forgiving others, but so my issue is that I can't forgive myself. It's like closure on a loved one that you've lost. I lost my dad long time ago, but there is somewhere in my life that I can't go forward. That thought's always with me, because when he was ill, I felt I wasn't there for him as much because I had other responsibility. I've got a special needs child, obviously, and I look after mom as well. And I feel I wasn't altogether there for him. And now that even though all these years he's gone, I can't put a closure to it. There's always that guilt that I wish I was a bit stronger at that time. And I can't move on.
Let me bring in another ingredient here, and it's again the whole subject of karma. And if I think about how I did what I could at that time, and I didn't know any better, and I couldn't have done anything else, I did what I could. Just to come to terms with that and accept whatever it is that's happened, I think before I can have peace, happiness is a further step away. But even just simply to have peace, first of all I need to have acceptance of what it is I did. I'm not ignoring it, I'm not saying I'm not guilty, but I'm just simply accepting that I did the best that I could have done at that moment, and today I've learned a big lesson, and now let me have more care for those around me if I can make it happen like that. So that's finished, but what am I doing now? Am I able to give my time in a way that's useful today?
It's very difficult for a closure for that. Because, as you say, there'll always be a missing puzzle in your life. You always wish you had done something at that time that you haven't done now. It's accepting that I wasn't there for him. It's the closure that you can't really do when it's somebody quite near to you that you've lost.
I believe that one can reach souls through love and good vibrations, especially through God's remembrance. And so if today I want to support that soul, the soul is eternal. The soul hasn't gone away. It's still around somewhere in another form. So what I can do is to, specifically for closure, not something that I continue to do for months and months, but maybe I do something for a week. And so what I do is, I sit in God's remembrance and I send God's light to the soul. What I couldn't do for you in the physical form, I want to make up for it now through spiritual love and vibrations. And so you do 10 minutes meditation every day for a week, especially to bring closure.
The modern person is full of choices, and there are so many different paths that we can choose. What about you? Do you ever question your knowledge, your mission, and your legacy?
Even having made a choice of the path that I want to be on, and I made that choice many, many years ago, and I've never wavered from that. But within the space of any one day, there are so many different things that come in front of you, and there's always still a choice to be made about what is it that's more important than the next, what is it that I'm going to give priority to. And so yes, it is a question that one is dealing with all the time. Yeah.
Children, parents, how do we channel our children to look for the source of happiness within when they are faced with technology, iPad, iPod, all kind of technology that is circulating in the school? And I know they benefit a lot from attending the classes here. Is there any advice for the routine of the day with how we relate with children?
Children respond to example. When they see what you're doing in your life, this is what they pick up. And so they say that values are not taught, they're caught. And so when they see you demonstrate a life of honesty, a life of love, a life of peace without anger, this is what will inspire them and help them also. And so just remember, every moment, you're the role model for them.
This is Ajay.
And also a lady at the back there. In the middle section.
Is the definition of happiness different for different people?
No, I don't think so. I think if you're looking at external things, people will say that, well, maybe it's your wealth, maybe it's your property, maybe it's your relationships, but those are external factors. The essential factor is, what I shared with my brother earlier, that it's coming back to that original state of the inner being and that connection with the self. And that is universal. Problems with
your physical health.
Dadi Janki, who I've quoted already a couple of times, is an amazing example of this. I've known her since 1957, and I was 8 years old at the time. So that's 61 years that I've known her now. And she manages to keep her consciousness just focused here in the awareness of the soul, the inner being, detached from the physical body, and whatever is happening with the physical body, and she's gone through, you name it, and she's been through that illness, but she's able to keep that sense of detachment of the soul from the body. And from time to time what she will do is take God's light and let the soul give that light to every part of the body, and that helps enormously. But also the sense of detachment from the body gives an increased capacity to be able to deal with pain. And so when the body is hurting, just to experience detachment, and the pain will subside, it will reduce. I've done it myself when the body has not been well, but that's not been that often. But Daddy does it just all the time, because she's had so many things she's been through. And so I know that it works.
Okay, I think we're going to draw it to close now, and I would ask Sister Jayanti if she can lead us into some meditation before we finish.
Thank you. Thank you for all your questions. Really genuine, sincere questions of inquiry. Sitting quietly, I reflect on the things I've been hearing about, and I want to find out for myself what is that state that is called happiness. And going inside, deeper and deeper, and coming to the awareness of the inner being, the soul. I, the soul, am separate to this physical body of mine. And I can feel within myself how peace feels comfortable. Peace is my natural state of being. And as I become peaceful, I'm also aware of the love that is within. Spiritual love for the soul. Spiritual love for the Creator. love for my human family. As the power of love unfolds, I begin to have a glimpse of truth. And as my horizon widens, and I see things from a higher perspective, I begin to feel the natural state of joy that exists in the soul. I am a being of peace, a being of love, being of joy, but I forgot myself. And now that I remember who I am, I am light, I am eternal, I am. And in this awareness, the happiness that I feel within radiates out. And the power of the vibrations of joy reach out into the world. My natural state, my original state of being, is happiness. In the state of happiness, I am content, at peace with myself, at peace with the world. I decide to hold this awareness keeping this awareness intact. I come back to the moment here and now. But I hold on to this experience. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.